Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. Are parents right to be concerned about the dangers children face in our increasingly digital world? Or is it that parents just don't understand the possibilities of the cyber age and the benefits they can bring children and teens, especially in education? Psychologist Kiralee Smout specialises in this often contentious area. She says there's truth in both positions. She recently spoke at the Australian Psychological Society's annual conference in Brisbane, giving professional workshops to fellow psychologists who work more and more often with families struggling with this brave new world. On Open House, she warned that to simply shun technology is not the answer.
Look, not only is it not realistic, I think that it unfortunately means that those young people are disadvantaged. I think that we need to help young people use technology safely, and parents and carers are in the best position to do that. So if we're not talking with young people about, you know, how is it that they limit their time, how is it that they make sure that they're looking at and doing things that are helpful for them, how is it that they make sure that they know how to navigate problems that might come up, if we're not training our young people on how to do that, it means they're really missing out.
This week was the 10th anniversary, can you imagine it, of the iPhone, the 10th anniversary.
Sure.
So that means, it puts it into perspective. I think Facebook is only less than 15 years old. Like, these are very, very recent in terms of human sociology and psychology. So if we haven't yet learned to cope with them, that's reasonable for us to say, okay, now we're knowing a little bit more. I hope the next generation deals with them better than the current generation. What then, as a psychologist, would you say are the clinical signs that something was amiss?
Look, I think when you start to see young people struggling with withdrawing, being unhappy, when you see that young people really don't want to do anything other than use technology, I think when you start to see that young people don't seem to enjoy things that they used to enjoy, then those are the indicators that we need to start looking at maybe changing something or getting some help. But really, it's more a matter of trying to incorporate how we coach families in managing technology. It's on a day-to-day basis. It's not about saying, well, things are either going well or they're not, but it's saying, okay, well, what can we do to have a conversation about our phone use as a family at the dinner table? What can we do about talking about when is, what games are okay and what games aren't? What can we do about teaching teenagers about how to respond when they feel like they've been upset by something they've seen online? What do we do about talking about what you do if you see something online that disturbs you? It's those everyday coaching conversations that are really important, yes, rather than sort of making dramatic changes.
Yes. All right. So let's have a few of those conversations. Let's imagine we're around the dinner table and you're chatting to me. Maybe I'm your child in this scenario, let's say. You've noticed that I'm texting at the dinner table. Start the conversation.
Okay, well, hopefully we've already had a conversation about that. So it might be, hey, John, our family rules is that we don't have the phone at the table. Is there any reason that you can't do that later? I would really like to chat with you and hear about your day, and I'd appreciate if you'd put it away and we can talk about what's happening at another time.
And I say, but Mum, my friends are online right now. I need to get into this right now. I've got to go and answer this question, otherwise they'll hate me forever and they'll call me names at school tomorrow.
Well, it would depend on the relationship that you have with your child, whether you push that issue and say, nope, sorry, mate, rules are rules, or whether you say, okay, well, this sounds like there's an exception, let's let it go this time. But, more important than what you do in the moment is what you do before that happens. It's setting it up. Mm. It's doing it over. Trying to manage a problem right then and there is got a lower rate of success because people are upset, people are worried, you are frustrated as a parent. It's then what you do later when you've got a time and go, let's talk about that. What happened? What am I missing? What don't I understand? Let me tell you how I feel about this and why it's important and why we have that rule.
Well, this conversation itself is something that could spark a further discussion. So let's imagine a scenario where tomorrow morning, Monday morning, you're driving your kids to school and you can say, you know what, I heard this really interesting thing on the radio last night. So if that's the opening gambit, what would you then as the parent, pick that up, Kiralee, and run with that?
Well, you know, there are lots of different things that you could discuss, but you could ask them about how they feel about their phone use and what the good things are about them having a phone. If you know, we're talking about, say, teenagers that might have one. Now, how does it help you? How does it help you communicate with other people? What's good for you about it? Do you have any concerns about it? Do you think there's anything that we should be doing differently? Are there any different rules that, you know, other families have that we don't have? Now, a lot of teenagers won't want to be, you know, talking a whole lot about that, and that's understandable because that, you know, for them, their phone is their most precious possession. That's true for a lot of teenagers.
Well, it's true for a lot of adults, most that I know.
Exactly. Well, because it connects us to the world. It connects us to information. It helps us work, solve problems. It helps us play. Mm. So there are lots of benefits of these pieces of technology to us, and that's okay. That's great. But what we have to do is know the risks. And, you know, one of the things that I go through with psychologists, for example, is to know the different risks that there are and then to go, how do we mitigate each of those separately, and how do we look at them in a very specific way rather than trying to make big, broad, general, you know, technology is good or it's bad statements, but what do we do specifically to make sure that the dangers are less likely to occur?
Well, you've mentioned earlier that some of the signs that there is a difficulty is if the child is becoming depressed, withdrawn, not enjoying the things they normally enjoy, the sorts of signs you look out for in kids for general depression and so on. What are the risks then? Tell us as parents what we should worry about.
Well, all right. Well, let's do doom and gloom for a minute because, you know, this is there are real problems. So the risks are that if you have teenagers who are spending a lot of time on social media, who are just scrolling through, comparing themselves to others, looking at what other people are looking like compared to them, that increased time on social networking like that in a very passive way can increase the risk of depression. It can make young people feel worse about themselves, and there's some good research now to show that increasing numbers of hours on social networking sites in a very passive way makes young people feel worse. We also know that there are risks involved in bullying, harassment and conflict online. We know that there are risks in terms of young people spending more time on their phone, which interferes with sleep, interferes with homework. We know that there's the chance of young people being exposed to adult material, pornographic material, for example. We know that there are problems with young people who are gaming excessively. So there are all these risks, and I haven't mentioned them all. On the upside, however, there are benefits. We know, for example, that young people can use technology to access help, to get support. Many young people make friends when they're gaming and increase good friendships. And I'm not just talking about damaging and harmful relationships. I'm talking about young people who really do have a sense of enhanced social connection through being online. They get information, they learn, they create. We know that young people start businesses, they show their creativity using online devices.
Yes.
So there's lots of positives as well, and what we have to do is to say, we can't stop this. We have to teach, we have to coach. It's like teaching a kid to drive a car. We need to put some time into it, and unfortunately parents are time poor.
Absolutely. But there'll be times, though, you've mentioned gaming addiction in particular. I want to spend a moment on that. There'll be times when a professional intervention is needed. How will you know when you've reached that point?
Well, my advice normally is if a parent is ever concerned enough to say, I don't know whether my child needs help, that in itself says go and talk to somebody. It might even just be a GP to start with. A parent, go and talk to a GP and say, I'm really concerned, what should I do? Because it might be that the parent just has a single session with a psychologist themselves, get some information, starts to think about what they want to do.
What treatments are available? What things can you do if a child is tending on the obsessional towards the addicted in terms of their gaming?
Well, there are a range of different treatments that we use. Unfortunately, of course, it would depend on how motivated the young person is. If you have a young person who acknowledges and feels that they're spending too much time gaming, then you can use a certain approach and start looking at how they might change things. If the young person is not at all motivated to change their gaming, and this is quite frequent, then as psychologists, and what we would sometimes do is work with parents or carers and see what we can do to help them support their young person in doing this less.
Is it like other addictions of this kind, which we recognise as a disease, that you really need to convince the person themselves that they need help?
Yeah, sometimes it is. Look,
parents might not be the best people to do the persuading there, by the way.
They might not be. You know, when we're talking about gaming addiction, there's lots of controversy about what that actually might look like. Mm. And we're talking about a small percentage of young people who we would put that label in place for. We can talk about problem gaming, and so that is gaming where young people are not spending as much time with family, sleep, educational activities, etc. But we wouldn't necessarily call that an addiction at that point.
Would you use cognitive behavioural? Would you use replacement activities? Would you address sleep issues?
Most of the research that we would be looking at would be based around a cognitive behavioural framework.
That's replacing inappropriate or unhelpful thoughts with better thoughts?
For gaming addiction, we might look at values. We might look at what is important to that young person to be doing overall. Mm-hmm. What do they want out of life? And looking at how they might be able to achieve that and how gaming might be getting in the way of that, getting them to make some decisions on changing behaviours around.
And just finally, are we seeing success?
There's definitely some positive outcomes for these kinds of treatments, and they can definitely make a difference.